Rebel headquarters. I'm gonna go straight to our guests. Let's have fun. Joining me now is Monica Miller. She is senior counsel for the American Humanist Association. Monica, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. Monica, given that you are with the American Humanist Association, I assume you're pro-humans.
I sure am, and I'm also pro non-humans.
Okay, well, we're gonna get to the non-humans in a second, because she's not kidding. But who's against the humans?
Okay, that's a question I haven't been asked before.
Yes.
I mean, ostensibly, I could name some people, but.
No, but it's a bit of a literal question, a little tongue in cheek, but you're senior counsel. You were lead counsel in 25 federal cases. So there are people that are on the other side arguing against the humanist position. So what do they argue?
You know, it's not actually the humanist position, it's the position of separation of church and state. So our argument is just that the government has to be neutral when it comes to religion, and that's what the Constitution requires. So it's not really the humanist position, and in fact, some of our cases we have Christian plaintiffs or plaintiffs who are agnostic, so it's not a humanist argument we're making, it's a separation of church and state argument.
Okay, so let's back up then. For the folks that don't know, what is a humanist?
A humanist is someone that doesn't usually believe in God, but believes you can be good without God. So we have, we use science and, rational thought to try to solve the world's problems and, are compassionate in our approach to life and, have concern for the planet, have concern for other species that are on the planet. So it's atheism, but it's also a lot of values that come with it.
Yes, a whole pro-humans and the planet seems dangerous. So I was always amused when Bill O'Reilly back in the day would attack the humanists. Mm-hmm. I mean, he almost sounded like a Ferengi.
Right.
Like, who's against the humans? Anyway.
Right, right.
Humanists could be atheists, agnostic, etc. But as you point out, in these cases, you're arguing for separation of church and state. And one reason that a Christian would want to bring a case like that is there's a lot of denominations of Christianity, which will rule them all. And so I wonder, because you were involved in so many of these cases, does that question ever come up when you talk to the folks on the other side who say, no, we should have giant crosses everywhere and we should establish religion in the Ten Commandments? Do they ever clarify whether the Methodists or the Lutherans should be in charge?
I mean, they don't clarify, but they certainly make an assumption that all Christians want to have the government endorsing their symbols, and that's simply not true. We actually had a pastor who wrote, we didn't have him, he wrote it on his own, in this cross case, the fact that he thinks it's blasphemous to use the cross for a symbol of the military, because in his denomination, they look at Jesus as a pacifist, and his dying on the cross symbolized to him an act of pacifism and not violence. So there's plenty of Christians that think, government and religion should be private, some Christians don't even revere the cross as their, holy symbol. I think the Mormons, for instance, consider themselves Christian and don't actually use the cross as their symbol.
Right. And look, when in history has religion been used by the military for evil? I mean, I remember there was a certain army that had on their buckle belts, or belt buckles, I think, the slogan, God is with us. Mm-hmm. But it was actually in German, Gott mit uns. Those were the Nazis. I believe it has been co-opted by government for bad purposes in the past. So it's a great point by the pastor.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more specifically about the city of Bladensburg. Tell us about that case. What is that case about?
Okay, so we have a giant 40-foot Christian cross that's towering over one of the busiest counties in busiest intersections in Prince George's County. The cross was originally put up by the town of Bladensburg or on town of Bladensburg property, and now it's owned by the Maryland National Capital Parks and Planning Commission, which is a bi-county agency. It's spent over $100,000 on this Christian symbol. It specifically and very elaborately rededicated it as a memorial to all war veterans. So although our opponents continue to talk about it as a World War I memorial, that's really only half of its history. The second half of its history has been a you know, dedicate at least, and this is assuming that the person that looks at this cross knows it's a war memorial to begin with, which we challenge, but assuming that one recognizes this as a war memorial, it's one for all veterans. And of course, as a cross, it's really just for Christian veterans.
No, their arguments are so hilarious. It's it's that it's amusing that they don't get laughed out of court. It's preposterous. I mean, so because when I see a giant 40-foot cross, I don't think Christianity. No, that's not the message I get at all. I think World War I. Nobody thinks that. Nobody thinks that. Of course they think it's owed to Christianity on government property.
Yeah. No, actually, it's funny you say that because they were kind of laughed out of court. In the Fourth Circuit oral arguments, when they were presenting their position that this is just a military symbol, Judge Wynn actually took deep offense to it. I mean, he was sort of laughing, but he's like, are you seriously trying to tell me that this Christian symbol, the one that I, you know, revere and respect, is a symbol of the military? And they kind of kept going at it. And he was just like, are you serious? I mean, it's news to me that this is a military symbol. I've always seen it as the symbol for Jesus Christ. So it's certainly a disingenuous argument. And I think that's manifest when they say, you know, that it's a non-Christian symbol, but removing it would be hostile towards religion. So it's kind of, you can't make both arguments, but they do.
Yeah. Well, if it's not, if it's a military symbol having nothing to do with Christianity, why would it be hostile to religion?
Right.
Yeah. In any of the cases that you deal with, sometimes what they do is they'll put other religious symbols around it, and they'll, you know, they'll be like, okay, here's a giant cross, but that's okay. I put like a Hanukkah bush next to it, so now it's not religious anymore. Well, first of all, that's also religious. Has anyone ever put up a Festivus tree to try to cover up for a cross?
You know, frankly, this cross is so large, it would be virtually impossible. I mean, they'd have to, it would take up the whole intersection and it would make it kind of dangerous because it is a three-way intersection where there's a lot of heavy traffic. That has not come up. And in fact, the land deeds basically preclude putting up more monuments on this plot of land. I don't know why, besides the fact that it's a intersection, but no one has put up a Festivus pole. I'm certain they wouldn't allow us to put up a Festivus pole. There is a flagpole. Maybe we could co-opt it as one, but that's that wouldn't solve the issue.
See, you can tell Monica Miller is an excellent attorney at law because she immediately but subtly corrected me that it's a Festivus pole and not a Festivus tree. Okay. All right, Monica, let's move on to the non-humans.
Sure.
So you are for, and this is a trip, personhood rights for non-human animals. Okay, first let's note the absurdity of that. I mean, next thing you're gonna tell me is that you're for personhood for inanimate objects like corporations.
Right, because that's never happened. It's exactly that. I mean, it's the paradox that, you know, a corporation has more or, you know, equal rights to humans and yet are, you know, species that are sentient, that are autonomous, elephants, chimpanzees, living, breathing, autonomous beings have no rights. They're legally property. They have no more rights than a couch, a chair, you know, pencil. And sometimes people are shocked by that because they assume that welfare legislation, you know, like you have to have a certain amount of water or, you know, food, that kind of thing, equates to rights, but it doesn't. Those are just statutes that give certain parameters for how you can maintain them, but those aren't rights for the being themselves.
So when Michael Vick went to prison for the dog fighting, he was violating a statute, but it wasn't a statute that necessarily gave the dogs any rights.
Right.
It just made it illegal to have dogs do that for us.
Precisely, precisely. And so we're looking at it, we're going through the common law, which is flexible, adaptable. It's actually the avenue in which a lot of slaves became gain their personhood, and it gives the courts a lot of authority to, you know, shape and change the law without having to go through the legislature. And we've argued that's the proper course for the type of right we're looking at, which is bodily liberty. We're not asking for them to have voting rights or, you know, the ability to do certain things that are kind of exclusively for humans. We're asking for them to just have their right to exercise the autonomy that we know they have, and that's through bodily liberty, vindicated through the writ of habeas corpus. So it's kind of, it's not a 5-minute conversation, but that's the gist.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna wrap it up in 5 minutes. okay, so in fact, I have one last question for you. Look, I'm not sure that that I agree with you on that, and it'd be an interesting longer conversation. Maybe we should have you back on to talk about that more. But this I know for sure, that animals that are at least alive should have more rights than inanimate objects like corporations.
Absolutely.
So I'll back you on that. So my last question is, where do you draw the line? So dogs, I presume, will have rights, but do cows, do ants? It's a literal question. I'm not trying to be facetious.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's sort of a two-part answer. I mean, one is that right now we are just looking at autonomy as the basis for the right to bodily liberty. So if an animal has a proven ability to understand its surroundings and to, you know, execute its desires, then it should be at least allowed to have a remedy to effectuate that. It's kind of hard to explain. But the second part to that is really that the courts are well equipped to, you know, modify the law as tailored to certain situations. So if they allow an elephant to have the right to bodily liberty, that doesn't mean the dog gets the right to bodily liberty. That doesn't mean the dog's liberty is even being infringed by being owned. We're just looking at the science of, you know, imprisoning elephants or chimpanzees, animals that we know thrive in wild, large environments and are put in, you know, zoos, and where their bodily liberty is so restricted that, you know, that it's inherently violative of their integrity, their bodily liberty.
It's fascinating. I would love to do a mock trial of a dolphin's rights versus ExxonMobil's rights.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, so we should look into that. All right, mm-hmm. Monica Miller, fighting the good fight on behalf of humans and non-humans, and so is the American Humanist Association. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate
it. Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
No problem. All right, that was fun. When we come back, someone fighting for a better democracy through ranked choice voting. Okay, and it had a direct result. Of course, the Republicans are challenging. We'll explain when we come back. All right, back on Rebel headquarters. Joining me now is Karen McCormick. She's co-founder of the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting. Fascinating. We've talked about this a little bit in the past, but a lot of on the ground details now that the elections have happened. Kara, welcome to Rebel headquarters.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, Cenk.
No problem. Great to have you here. All right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So you worked in politics for a stunning number of folks for a stunning number of years. But ranked choice voting is new. Relatively new, and so I'm really curious about the implementation of it. So they have it in Maine now, and you advocated for getting it implemented in Maine. Before we get to the results, I actually want to talk a little bit about how you got that done. It wasn't easy. What was the process for making that the system of voting in Maine?
So we started the battle for ranked choice voting about 4 years ago. The first thing we did was we got five people together to petition the Secretary of State to put a law on the ballot which would have ranked choice voting in all federal elections and all state elections. And we gathered over the course of about a year 10% of the signatures. We needed 61,123 signatures, which we got. We got on the ballot. We won an election in November of 2016. We won with the second highest most votes of any citizen referendum in the history of the state of Maine. And we thought we had ranked choice voting, and it was going to be the law of the state of Maine. It was the law of the state of Maine through the Citizens Initiative process. And on January 7th, it became the law. And about 4 days later, we realized that the legislature was going to repeal the law and take it off the books, which is exactly what they did in a special session, a late night session of the legislature that they called specifically for this purpose. In one of the most anti-democratic things that I've ever seen, they repealed the ranked choice voting law on October 23rd of 2017. So luckily, in the state of Maine, we have something in our constitution called the people's veto. So that allows us to not only propose laws and get them passed by the people, but it also allows us to veto laws that they've passed, which we find repellent. So This time what we did is in 88 days, in the middle of the winter, we gathered another 80,000 signatures. We had at that time almost 2,000 volunteers in the streets collecting those signatures. We turned them in, we froze the law in place, and we used ranked choice voting for the very first time in the state of Maine on June 12th. And on that same day, we voted again to keep ranked choice voting. And we won this time by an 8% margin.
So Kara, let me guess, the Republicans, as usual, opposed democracy. And I say that not because ranked choice voting is necessarily more democratic, although that argument certainly could be made, but it was a ballot measure. So we passed the ballot measure. They're like, yeah, we don't care about your stinking democracy. But was it just the Republicans, or did some of the establishment Democrats go along as well?
It was the Republicans for the most part. It was the Senate president, but it was also there were also Democrats for sure that were against ranked choice voting, and they, together with the Republicans, were able to repeal the law that we voted for literally in the middle of the night in a special session that they called just to do that. And it was stunning to watch. I was in the gallery that night, and I couldn't believe my eyes that these politicians, these elected representatives in Maine, would so ignore the results of a free and fair election and ignore the will of the people of Maine to choose the way that we elect our leaders.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, these days it's very believable. South Dakota did it in a ballot measure. Michigan's doing it right now in their lame duck session. They're trying to gut a couple of ballot initiatives. In every one of those cases, it's Republican-led legislatures that are saying, we don't care about democracy, we're not in favor of democracy, and if you vote in a way that disadvantages the Republican Party, we will just illegally get rid of the ballot measure. It's unbelievable, but here we are.
It is, and I've worked in politics for 25 years, and it still was stunning to watch it happen right on the board before your very eyes. When we knew how hard we had worked to pass it. But the great news is that at least in Maine, we had the power to take it back again. And so now, I don't know if you know that saying, the obstacle is the way. But by them repealing it, it just made us stronger. It had the people come together in such a way that they really saw it as a crucible. They saw it as their DNA. They got out into the streets. It was one of the coldest winters ever in the history of Maine. We collected signatures during what was called a bomb cyclone, and people just owned it. They took it back. It was awesome. It was, as anti-democratic and horrible as it was to see, the beauty of the people rising up and sort of going through this crucible together and then coming through it should give everyone hope.
That is a good inspiring story. Did you say that it was a bomb cyclone?
That's what they called the storm that came through. Was called a bomb cyclone. And so one of the things we did in the middle of it was sent messages around to each other saying, here's how to collect signatures during a bomb cyclone. Make sure that you get a gel pen so the ink won't freeze. Make sure that you stuff your pen inside your glove, in between getting signatures. It was really cold.
Now that's folks fighting for democracy, okay? And I think that bomb cyclone is one of the nicknames for Donald Trump. okay, so now let's talk about the results. So you got ranked choice voting, and then what happened in Maine District 2?
So in Congressional District 2, we had our first ranked choice voting election in June. We chose our Democratic nominee for governor, our Republican nominee for governor using ranked choice voting. And then we had in the general election the first ever races for U.S. House and U.S. Senate using ranked choice voting. And in the second Congressional District, we had four candidates for Congress. One was a Democrat. His name was Bruce Poliquin. He was the incumbent Republican politician. The Democrat is called Jared Golden, and he was the Democratic politician. And then we had two independents who ran, a woman called Tiffany Bond and a man named Will Hoare. And in the first round of counting in ranked choice voting, Bruce Poliquin and Jared Golden were the top two, each with roughly 46% of the vote. And in the second round of counting, or when the ranked choice voting kicked in, Jared Golden moved ahead from the plurality vote into the majority, and so was declared the winner of that election. Although we were just in court today because the Republicans are still fighting ranked choice voting in the courts.
So let's break it down a little bit further. So do you only go to the second round if no one gets a majority in the first round?
That's correct. If somebody gets 50% plus one in the first round, they're the winner.
Okay, so and that makes sense because it's logical. You could add up all the other votes and you're still not gonna pass 50.1, right?
That's right.
So if Poliquin, the Republican, had won outright, and then it would have been over, but he didn't. So it was, but he did have the lead in the first round, 46.4 to 45.5.
That's correct.
And apparently the people who liked the independents liked Golden better than they liked Poliquin, so they ranked him higher. And when you put their votes in, then Golden wins in the second round. So what's the Poliquin's argument here? I mean, you have ranked choice voting. That's what the system produced. So what's he claiming?
So he is claiming in federal court, United States District Court, with a brand new judge, Lance E. Walker, who's a Trump-appointed judge, is claiming that ranked choice voting is unconstitutional under the United States Constitution. He says that it or his lawyers say that it violates the Article 1, Section 2 of the United States Constitution, which says that a vote should be is of the people. And they are saying that of the people in our Constitution, or chosen by the people in our Constitution, means chosen by a first post, the first past the post plurality vote.
Yeah, I don't think that ranked choice voting makes people not people. So I'm not sure that that's a sound argument. There's still people.
Well, the judge doesn't think so either. They asked for a TRO. They asked to halt the counting of the ballots, to stop the election, to declare him the winner immediately, to stop this crazy scheme. And the judge, you know, again, a Trump-appointed judge, he'd been on the job for about 3 weeks at the time that he heard our case the first time. He said, no, there is not a constitutional infirmity here. You know, ranked choice voting is constitutional. I'm not going to stop the election. And we went back to court today and argued again. Long, you know, I think we were there for about 5 hours today. But this has been quite a battle.
So, Kara, last thing here.
Imagine.
Last thing here, real quick. So, I'm not seeing this wrong, right? If it turns out that the other candidates that were in the race that came in third and fourth were, for example, libertarians, and they had ranked Poliquin ahead, he would have won, even if he was losing in the first round. So it's not like it's rigged against Republicans. In a lot of cases, it could actually help Republicans.
Oh, absolutely not. This is one of the things that, you know, all that Republicans and Democrats have to do under a ranked choice voting system to win is to put forward a candidate that's attractive to Democrats, Republicans, and independents. You want to be the most attractive candidate to the broadest number of people. You want to get over 50% of the vote. If you're not somebody's first choice, then you definitely want to be their second choice. And these candidates get elected with a nice, broad majority of the people.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful system.
Yeah. Winning with a majority of the votes sounds like a democracy.
Right.
Okay. Kara McCormick, co-founder of the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Shank. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Take care.
You too. All right, we're out of time, guys. TYT.com/join or TYT.com/jank to become a member. And I'm gonna tell you all about the Sanders Institute gathering that happened in Vermont with a lot of the progressives that back Bernie Sanders in the post game for the members. I'll see you there.